Xbox. Well, good morning. We're now in the land where it's still snowing.
It is.
It's still snowing. And we've hippity-hoppitied, but we had to have cleats on so we wouldn't slip on the ice. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our book pick segment for this Tuesday morning. Thrilled, as always, to have the wonderful Amy Lane of Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York, with us to tell us her list for the week. And I have to say, a pretty darn impressive list. Good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Good to see you. Wonderful
to
have you here.
Thank you.
All right. Where would you like to begin?
I'm going to actually start with Marilyn Robinson. Her latest book is in a book of essays entitled, What Are We Doing Here? And I think that question can be interpreted in many different ways. But in I feel the way that she is looking at it is in, like, what are we doing here? Like, not what are we doing here in the overall philosophical, right. Like, grand divinity.
What are we doing here?
But there's some of that. But it's I'm going to read something from her preface, as a matter of fact. And it's this. We have surrendered thought to ideology. Every question is, for all purposes, the same question. Every answer, the same answer. Why has anyone done anything? Self-interest. This is true of the whole species, but it is most emphatically true of Americans. Where in all of this is our wisdom, courage, generosity, personal dignity. To think in terms is naive. These qualities are merely apparent and never determinant. To say that we as a national community have benefited from them, that individuals have actually considered the general welfare from time to time and addressed it, acted in light of it, is to slide into shameless nationalism. So that's sort of my beginning with Marilyn Robinson.
What page is that on?
That's the preface.
Wow.
That's, you know,
man.
Page 12 in the preface.
Okay.
She also goes on in one of her later essays, and all of these, by the way, are...
Was that written this morning?
Yeah. No.
Go ahead.
Are lectures that she delivered to various institutions. And there's one in here which... there's a couple in here that have been published through magazines, and one on... The one she did on Barack Obama, which, what was the title of it? I can't remember now, but it was brilliant and beautiful, so that alone is worth reading. Here's a piece, too. I have arrived at the conclusion that American history is substantially false, though not exceptionally so, and that many of these falsifications go back to a source that is older than the country, earlier than the colonies. I dwell on American history because it is mine and because it is the screen on which the national psyche is projected. I would like to think America might go on for a very long time, always recognizable in its best qualities, however it may transform itself otherwise. This whole passage in this essay titled Our Public Conversation is kind of astonishing about the way we think about our history, how we all, right, left, center, sort of... alter and falsify our history to suit our needs, right? We remember what we want to remember,
yes.
And we play it and push it into our narrative. And it's just, it's important what she's writing. It's pertinent what she's putting out there. It's thought-provoking. This is something that you need to take your time with, but it will bring you to a new place in your own sense of intellectualism and scholarly referendum. And I think that is something that we all really need to start focusing on a little bit more. And I'm sorry to push that agenda on you this morning, but it matters. The
it
way
does
we think
matter.
About things really does seem to matter now more than ever.
Marilyn Robinson's new book is What Are We Doing Here?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to hold off on my next heavy.
Okay, you're going to give us a break?
I'll bury that down the list a little.
All right.
Let's move on to something kind of lovely and fun. Amy Bloom has a new book out called, oh, thank you, White Houses. Yeah. This is a narrative history, a fictional history between the relationship between Eleanor Roosevelt and Lenora Hicks Hickok. And it's... Of course, it's told as only Amy Bloom can tell it. It's beautifully done. It's first person through the eyes of Hick, and it's very reflective in its telling. So there's a lot of, for lack of a better term, sort of flashbacks, but they don't feel like flashbacks. It just feels like Hick telling a story of her earlier life to Eleanor or to others. There was this great review. I think it was in the Kirkus Review, and I picked it out here. Yeah, it was Kirkus. So the book takes place after the death of FDR, and Eleanor has requested that Hick return to her, and they seek comfort in one another. And there's this great passage from the Kirkus Review that says, now in late middle age, the two fall into their ingrained routine as lovers. And has anyone written about middle-aged women's bodies and sexuality with Bloom's affectionate grace? And she does. And it's really kind of... it's not like revolutionary to put it that way, but it's lovely to see women of a certain age, let's say,
right,
being given a description that is accurate and loving and beautiful about their bodies, those horribly changing bodies that we all have that suffer to gravity and the rest.
The degradation of the human body, as my father used to refer to it.
Yes.
White Houses is the name of the novel. Yes. It is by Amy Bloom. She's coming up on the book show, by the way. She'll be in there in a few weeks, and we're excited about having her on the program.
The book is about so much more than that, but that was a lovely little aspect that was like... It's true. She really does. And she just slyly throws it in there. And it's all matter of fact. But it's nice to feel beautiful at any rate. So moving on to, oh, yes, another historical novel. Robin Oliveira, who wrote the book My Name is Mary Sutter, has delivered us her follow-up to that, which is fantastic. It's called Winter Sisters. Mary Sutter is now married to her doctor love, William, and she is living here in Albany, New York in, I believe it's 1879? Yes, 1879. So the whole book takes place here in Albany, which is lovely. Oh, and by the way, Robin will be coming to the Schenectady Library on May 3rd. Mark your dates. This is going to be great. Please come out and see her. She's phenomenal as a speaker and reader. So this book is effectively... the crux of the book takes place around a blizzard that occurs. Parents of these two young girls die in that blizzard, and the girls were at school, and they decide to trek home together. They're 8 and 10, and they go missing. And eventually, weeks later, months later, the thaw happens, and there's a flood, and the girls are able to escape and emerge not unscathed, unfortunately, and that's a terrible thing to have to understand in the book. And by the way, did we know that back in the day, the age of consent was 10?
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that becomes part of a sweeping sort of courtroom drama and part of this little girl's lives. But it's a really fascinating book. It's so much more than that, and it's very rich with... women's lives, to put it, and how women and girls are affected in this time period and the decisions that they make and why they make them and the consequences of all of those decisions. And it's so well written. She's a really good writer. She's engaging and captivating and a great storyteller. So Robin Oliveira, Winter Sisters. Read it.
And the event is May
3rd.
May 3rd, and we'll give the information out at the end of the segment as well. You ready for the heavy one yet?
Yeah, my next heavy one. And it's not too heavy, but it's Zadie Smith, who we love.
We do love her.
Brilliant novelist. Also now delivering us a book of essays called Feel Free. And this is, you know, she's a deep intellectual, in a different way than Marilynne Robinson is, but she talks about things in really accessible ways and interesting ways. So like one of my favorites, I'm sorry to say. She has this whole thing about Justin Bieber in here, right? It's the essay is just called Meet Justin Bieber. And what it's really about is this philosophical thought of philosophical Martin Buber, right? And she has this little footnote here that says Bieber and Buber are alternative spellings of the same German surname. Who am I to ignore these hints from the universe?
Okay.
So it's about Martin Buber's I and thou sort of philosophy and how, like, Justin Bieber is more of an object than a person, right? Like, we view him not as a person, but as
seems like we have created him.
Right, in an extent. But what I like about what Zadie Smith does in hers is I think Marilyn is really out there to get you to, like, to sort of shake you and make you think, right, and reassess the way that we've been thinking. And I think in some ways Zadie wants you to, she has these thoughts and she wants to give them to you and you can take them in and think about them if you want and feel things. So it's fascinating, and I love that these two women's essays are both out around the same time, and they're both really fantastic, and they do get you to reassess what we think is sort of our everyday life.
Excellent. The name of the book is Feel Free by Zadie Smith.
And then there's a couple of YA novels, and I'm gonna start with the one that's written by Dana. It's not Melee, but I don't know how to pronounce her last name, and I apologize, Dana.
Melee?
M-E-L-E.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's called People Like Us, and it's a boarding school sort of thriller that's been likened to Donna Tartt's the
Secrets, Secret History.
That's it, The Secret History.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We both got there. And it's riveting. The whole thing starts off, of course, with the dead body found by the girls in the boarding school, the Bates Academy. Yep. And then you get to sort of see how all of this plays out, how that affects them. These, by the way, our main character came to the, you know, school as the underprivileged and decided that she was going to do everything she could to fit in, and has kind of become a bit of a mean girl, right, in the process. So you get to sort of into that mindset of the mean girl, but she's not really a mean girl. So, because you get to sympathize with her.
Kind of a mean person?
Yeah, well.
Semi-mean?
Well, she does bad things, but I think in her heart she's not a bad person.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does.
So, it's all sort of in deference to belonging. And I think, you know, as an adolescent, you can really identify with that desire to belong. But because some of this is a bit of a revenge plot that comes out, and she's being blackmailed because she did this thing in her past, and now somebody has caught on to it, and now they are making her do these other horrible things, right? So it's like the bullying of the bully, and it's a very intricate, again, gripping. It just pulls you in, and it's like these sorts of things make me nervous. I'm shaking right now, like my little arms.
Right, sure, yeah.
Because it's terrible when people are made to do bad things and feel bad. But it's good to address this. It's important that we address these issues at that time in our life. And so anyway, People Like Us, gripping, interesting, thrilling. There we have that.
It's a YA novel. It is called People Like Us by Dana, M-E-L-E.
Yes. And then my last one, this is the one that I want to go to bat for, and I think the publishing industry is trying to go to bat for this one. It is called The Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi, and it is phenomenal. It's the first in a series. It is going to pull you in and take you along by the hand, and you will not regret a single step along the way. It has everything you could possibly want. And I want to read this letter that was included in the advanced reader's copies that we receive at the store. And it is from the author, and it says, "Dear reader, there are so many things I want to say to you, but the most important is thank you, thank you, thank you. Children of Blood and Bone is the book of my heart in every way, shape, and form. It holds the magic and adventure that have made me an avid lover of fantasy and storytelling my whole life. It has the diverse cast I have always wanted to see in my favorite stories but never got to. But above everything else, this story has my heart because it's given me something to hold on to during very dark chapters in my life. This book was written during a time where I kept turning on the news and seeing stories of unarmed black men and children being shot by the police. I felt afraid and angry and paralyzed and helpless, but this book was the one thing that helped me feel like I could do something about it. I told myself that if just one person's heart or mind could be changed by reading it, then I would have done something meaningful against a problem that often feels so much bigger than myself. And now this book exists, and you are reading it. And there are so many things that I hope for this story, and this is what's really important to me, Amy. But I want to end this letter with all the things I hope it gives you. I hope Children of Blood and Bone brings you an epic fantasy adventure like nothing you've ever experienced. I hope you see a glimpse into my Nigerian heritage and the beautiful cultures and people Africa holds. I hope the story makes you want to pick up a staff and ride on the back of a giant lion air. I hope if you've never seen yourself as the hero of a story, this book changes that. I hope this novel makes you think and feel. I hope it propels you to help those who suffer the fate of the Magi in the world around us. But most of all, I hope this book is only the beginning of our adventures together. And I will say this, all of her hopes come true. She delivers on every single one of those points in spades. It is brilliant. Read this.
A West African-inspired debut novel.
It's phenomenal.
And a series, we assume.
Yes, yeah. It's
so
going to be made
Children
into a movie.
Of Blood and Bone. Oh, the whole thing.
Yes!
So this is all good.
Yes,
excellent.
It's great.
Good stuff. Tomi Adeyemi?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Anything else?
No, this is... Oh, wait. Yes, I do. I forgot about my little one. It's okay. Called The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating by Elizabeth Tova Bailey. It's so sweet and small. This is a charming little book. It's a memoir the author wrote. It's sort of a dual thing, but it's a memoir the author wrote while she was convalescing. She has a disease that... an illness that... has her bedridden. She never expresses what that illness is, but a friend of hers brings to her a gift of a snail and a little wild flower, and the snail sort of captivates her, and it becomes a focus and takes her sort of out of her own just stasis for a while and gives her something to engage with and stay connected to as the whirlwind of everybody else's life continues around her that she can no longer participate in. It's slow and moving. And it is a fast little read. It's fascinating. All sorts of snail facts. Did you know they had 102 sets of teeth?
No.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea.
Right?
I know you could kill them with salt. That was about all I knew.
Shh, don't do that. They're really cool. I never had such a deep appreciation for snails until now.
The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating. The author of that book is Elizabeth Tova Bailey. You can find Amy's complete list by going to the website, our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Better yet, you can visit the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady. And your website, opendoor-bookstore.com. Excellent. Amy Lane, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.